Thank you for joining us and welcome to another edition of Answers Network. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and if you're just learning about this show now, please know that it is on the air for you. And we do so by bringing on special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases, entertain. Our goal for each show is to bring answers and options to making your lives happier, healthier, and more successful. And remember, if you can't listen live, go to our website at answers.network and browse through a variety of heartfelt and enlightening topics. I am confident that there will be something you will find to bring greater joy to your life or to someone you love. Now, I also have a favor to ask. Please forward at least one of our shows to your social media group and to someone you know who can benefit from a particular subject. This is just one powerful way that we can make a positive influence in the world together. Now, most of you are very familiar with conventional medicine, which uses scientific research, data, and linear thinking to treat disorders and diseases. Now, unfortunately, in my opinion, much of this has been hijacked by big pharma and huge hospital corporations to serve corporate bottom lines before patients' health. Now, with little focus on preventative measures, but this is not the only approach to medicine, health, or wellness. Our guest, Judith Shamosh, PhD, is a systems herbalist and has been a clinical practitioner since 1994. She's the founder of Green Fingers Herbal Medicine Clinic, and she practices and teaches Ayurvedic, Chinese, and Western herbal medicines. She has served on the governing councils of the American Herbalist Guide Guild, Arizona Herb Association, and Rainstar University College of Acupuncture and Oriental Medicine, as well as adjunct faculty of the Southwest College of Naturopathic Medicine. Dr. Judith's new book is The Physics and Poetry of Eastern Herbal Medicine. And she shares that her intention is to bring the valuable principles of Eastern medicine into the mainstream of modern healthcare. And by having her here today, my goal is to help her achieve that. Judith, welcome to Answers Network.
Thank you, Alan. So great to be here.
Well, it is my pleasure. And I love the fact that you are bringing or shining a light on things that I think that we all need to be looking at. I look at life oftentimes with a giant pendulum. And I think that with pharmaceuticals and with big health corporations and stuff, it all became very necessary and it was all doing a lot of good. But I now feel that that pendulum has swung so far in the opposite direction that we've gotten past where it was most useful. And they're trying to make it the answer for everything. And I don't believe it is. And in doing so, they're trying to get people to kind of shy away from or not look at some of the natural things that have worked since the beginning of time. So I really want to thank you for being someone that I think is bringing sanity to that, but also bringing everybody back to some things that really have worked. And there's no reason for us to discard all of these things because corporations are coming up with a particular pill or whatever that they think might replace it, because we know it doesn't always do that. So appreciate it.
My delight.
One of the things that I brought up in the introduction was a system herbalist. Can you share with us what that is and what systems approach to medicine? And what caused you to gravitate towards this particular area?
Well, first of all, a system, when you talk about systemic thinking or systems thinking, you're talking about taking whatever it is and leaving it in its context. So, for example, mm-hmm. if you are studying a cell, you want it to remain in its context in order to know what it is and what it does. if you take it out of its context, you basically are killing the cell. And when you kill the cell, it loses its pattern of life. And then you are looking at something very different from what it was originally meant to be, as part of a system, as part of a relationship in a bigger system. So a systems herbalist would look at the client or patient in terms of how they are in and of themselves and in their environment. So we don't extract numbers from them. The numbers really don't tell us anything any more than individual notes in a piece of music will tell us what symphony is playing. So the numbers are really very abstract and give us nothing about the individual, who the individual is. So when we in Ayurveda, and I'm speaking in Ayurveda, Eastern medicine, Ayurveda, Chinese medicine, we see the client in terms as a whole being. So we can't separate those numbers out from what is happening to the client. We have to look at their lifestyle. What are they eating? What are they not eating? What's their exercise level, if they have any? What's their stress level? What's their job? What's their home environment? All these things have such an impact, and you can't qualify those by numbers. So without that information, if a doctor is simply, a medical doctor, simply looking at numbers, they have only a very small piece of information about that particular patient. So that is basically what context or systemic thinking would be. So it's very much more involved. It takes a lot more work. It takes a tremendous amount of education, and it takes, above all, caring about the individual.
You know, as you were saying that, and I wasn't even really planning to go in this direction, but you made me think of it because you started out talking about our cells. And is one of the issues, does it have to do with autophagy and the fact that in many times it's just that we have dead or dying cells that just need to be cleared out so that newer, younger cells can replace it, so that our own immune system can help fight whatever infection or fight whatever is going on, like our body was designed to.
Yes. And so a healthy, normally functioning, healthy system will do that automatically. If you add, and it doesn't even have to be toxins. I know a lot of people consider sugar a toxin. Well, sometimes it can be a medicine, actually. So everything can be a medicine if used properly. But as long as the system, the metabolic system, is and substances are moving in the body and then subsequently moving out of the body, it's a concept called dosha in Ayurveda. As long as that is happening, then the body remains healthy. It takes care of itself. There's little interference we have to give it, other than the normal healthy food, healthy lifestyle, healthy exercise, healthy thinking. So that just will take care of itself. And we can feel that actually in the pulse, if that's happening or not happening. So I mentioned sugar. So sugar is a substance that is very, and we can get into this later when we're talking about taste, but it has a very cold and dampening aspect. When you eat too much of it, just for an example, and by the way, meats are considered sweet. Too much protein is considered sweet. So when we eat too much of that, our bodies become like a damp sponge and soggy, and it's more difficult to move that sogginess out of the system. because water is very heavy and difficult to move. So it takes a lot of energy to do that. So if, again, if you're eating properly and eating a balanced diet and eating all the flavors or tastes that are required, then everything should be working pretty normally and healthfully.
And you mentioned you can tell through pulse. Is that similar to like muscle testing
No.
that is also done by healers?
No. It's very, very different. Pulse taking, pulse assessment is a very involved art. It takes many years for a lot of people to learn it. Some people pick it up faster, but it involves taking the pulse on the radial arteries, both wrists, in six different places. In Ayurveda, it's at seven levels. In Chinese medicine, it's three or four levels. And then you have the different qualities of each pulse and where the pulse actually hits your finger, your fingertip. So you have to learn to read through your fingers. And it's a form, it's a, I would say it's a form of reading, like almost like Braille, but more involved and a lot more subjective and a lot deeper. So we can tell a lot about what the organ systems are doing by just taking the pulse. And it does take a long time to learn. So it's not something that you can easily learn from a book.
Gotcha. Yeah. Or a night class. Huh?
Oh, no. No. No, you need to take thousands. My students take thousands of pulses before they are even close to understanding how to qualify the information that comes through the pulse.
And I would love to go more into that. In fact, personally, it's something that intrigues me greatly. But I know one of the things that I think helps on this show are some of the stories, because sometimes people are listening and they're going, I'm not sure that I'm getting that. But in your book, you tell a story about a woman who was possibly going to lose her leg due to infection. Can you share that story? Because I think it's a good example of what you do.
Yeah, this was early on in my practice, and I am still very careful to find out what people eat and drink, their lifestyles. My questionnaire involves a lot of that. And so I'm going through the information about her that she is telling me in the questionnaire. And we get to the food, and she tells me, because I have a area where she can fill out how many cups of coffee she was drinking a day. And because coffee can be a medicine just like sugar. But in excess, or it can be detrimental. So I asked her, well, and she had 8 to 10. And I said, oh, eight to 10 cups of coffee. And she said, no, 8 to 10 pots. And I said, you mean cups, like cups of coffee? And she said, no, pots of coffee.
Wow.
And I was flabbergasted. I'd never heard of that. And so I then afterwards took her pulses, and I realized she had all this, you would say toxins. There was a lot of damp and what we call heat accumulating in her lower body, which would be in this case her leg, causing this horrible lesion to occur. Wow. And of course, it just kept getting bigger because she kept doing the same thing. So I asked her, I said, when you went to all these doctors to try and save your leg, and when there were many doctors, did anybody ask you what you put in your mouth? And she said, no, not one asked me what I ate. Not one. And I said, well, I believe that your problem is caused pretty much by what the 8 to 10 pots of coffee you're drinking a day. So I had her stop that. She was willing to do it cold turkey. I'm sure she got major headaches from that. But she was willing to do it because it was going to save her leg. And she came back a month later. The wound was just about healed up. She was ecstatic. I, of course, had given her herbal medicine to facilitate that healing process and the and the cleaning out process, or cleansing, as you, as the naturopaths would say. And and in a very short period of time, the leg just healed up. She was one of my best clients. She referred so many people to me after that. And she worked in a doctor's office, by the way.
Yeah. Did she share with you any of her conversations with the doctors, and especially the doctor who was going to profit greatly by removing her leg?
No, she didn't. I actually didn't ask, because it's a story I hear over and over and over. They don't want to know anything but what they're focused on. They take that leg out of context. They take that wound out of context. So it's no longer happening in that person. It's just a separate leg. It's a separate wound. It's totally out of context from who this person is who is causing the problem.
Yeah. And, so, and I was going to say, and it, that's so sad. I mean, that that, that is occurring. And one of the reasons why I asked is that many years ago, I had broken my arm, and it was a spiral fracture, and I ended up going to a healer that was using sound energy and other areas, you know, to help it heal. And when I went back to the orthopedist for my checkup after 4 weeks, it was healed. And I started to tell him what I did, and he stopped me.
He
said, "Don't tell me. I don't want to know this. I'm not going to tell you to stop doing it, but, you know, keep doing whatever you're doing, but don't tell me about it." And I think that they're so fearful of their own license or whatever that, you know, it's the thing like a child that puts their fingers in their ear and goes, la, 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 la. Please don't tell me something that would actually show how you can heal so much faster.
I know. It's very sad. Well, they have a vested interest. They have years and years of education. It's questionable whether it's, well, anyway, and they have, and they have a lot of money invested in what they do. So they have no choice. And then they end up, you know, the first 10, 20 years of their practice, just paying back these humongous loans. They don't want to know. They don't want to know.
Yeah, I've spoken with some MDs who have also then later gone and got their ND, and they have also mentioned that what they realized was that much of their education as an MD, that the schools and many of the classes were funded by Big Pharma.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
You know, and so, but I mean, I honor them, and I'm so thankful that they were also the ones that are wise enough to go and say, you know what, I was deprived of a large portion of the education that I should have gotten, and they've gone out and got their ND as well, and those are now my favorite doctors, the ones that have both.
Mm-hmm. Yes, but I will interject something here,
please,
if I
do.
May. NDs are also Western trained. They are not, they don't think systemically. Some of them do go and study other things which help them go the systemic route. But yes, the NDs are very, very much better. And if you have to go somewhere, I would recommend that. But they are Western trained. So their thinking is very similar to a medical doctor. A little better, a little more open-minded.
Yes. And actually we have a listener question and comment that is coming in. And again, for those that send these in, please keep doing it. I really appreciate it. Many of these come in from teachers that say, you know, I'm working in the middle of the day, but I would love if you could ask the guest this. This one reads, I am totally fascinated by your book and will be ordering a copy for myself and my daughter, who has been in the healing arts for 10 years now. She is passionate about the new science validating the effects of vibration and light on brain and organ functioning. We're both looking forward to listening to your show and learning more about your specific approach. Do you have any thoughts or input in regards to the effects of vibration and light? This is from Alice in New Mexico, by the way.
Oh, another New Mexican. Yeah. Hello.
Yes.
I haven't delved into the physics of the vibration itself, so I can't give you an exact answer, but I think I will do that after being here. So, and then I will add that to my next book. So, or essays, or put it on my website so that other people can read it. I have other essays on vibration, but vibration is just sound. Ayurveda is very much, as a matter of fact, the Sanskrit language is all about sound and how it affects people. Of course, it's not a language we use anymore, but except in the schools when you're studying Ayurveda in India. But sound is very much a vibratory healing modem. And by stimulating the cells to, and I would say it's similar to herbal medicine, that kind of reminds the cells and the awareness, the entire awareness of the body, how to function better than the way they're doing it now. So it kind of puts the awareness back on track. And I'm talking about the more of the ethereal sense of awareness, not the mental sense of awareness. And by doing that, it would bring the cell back into balance, or bring the awareness and therefore the cells back into a balance. So our awareness has everything to do with our health. So that's why thinking or avoiding thinking about negative thoughts or thinking positive thoughts is so important.
Yes. And actually, I have a question in regards to children. But before I do that, you just brought up the point about the difference between thinking positive thoughts and negative thoughts. And there's a very famous Major League Baseball manager that wrote in one of his books the difference between the way in which he would word things. And he said that as an early manager, he would go out and he would talk to the pitcher when they were in a difficult situation. And he'd say, okay, the guy that's up now hits really well when it's pitch low and outside. So whatever you do, don't pitch low and outside. And he said that he couldn't understand, but he said, he would go back to the dugout. The guy would throw one low and outside. The guy would hit a home run. And you know, when he came back in the dugout, he'd say, well, I don't understand. I told you not to do that. And what he learned from that is that he changed his way of managing to where he would go out there and say, you know, you're a great pitcher. This guy can't hit high and inside pitches. So I want you to throw it high and inside, stay inside on this guy. And I have confidence in you because you are the best one out here and you're going to get him out. And he said it changed the way he managed just by the way he worded things. Mm-hmm. But I think it goes to right exactly what you're saying is that what kind of seeds are we planting? Are we planting positive or are we planting negative?
Right. And we have a choice. Yes. We always have a choice. Mm-hmm. And if you consciously make the choice to think positively, then that's, you're way ahead of the game.
All right. Okay. The book we are talking about is called The Physics and Poetry of Eastern Herbal Medicine. Now, we're going to take a break, but one of the things that you can do is you can go to Judith's website and you can open up another window and you can follow along with some of the things that we're talking about. So that website is Judith, and I'm going to spell all of this out because Judith is spelled a little differently. It's JudithShamosh.com. So if you go to that website, you can open up another window. And when we come back from the commercial, you can follow along with us. So stay with us. You're listening to or watching Answers Network.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services and West Shield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we're back. You are listening to Answers Network, and we're talking about herbal medicines. And Judith, one of my questions is, how do children respond to this type of medicine? Because one of my thoughts is that I would think that before they've had a chance to be sort of brainwashed into believing a lot of things that many of us are taught from a very early age, is it actually easier to get them to really grasp this and go with it?
Yes, very much so. Children respond beautifully to herbal medicine because there's not so many layers that have to be peeled back, so to speak, in order to get them well. So they do respond extremely well. My daughter was raised totally on herbal medicine. And as I mentioned before, she rarely, if ever, got sick. And, or if something came up, it was fixed within an hour or two. That's the beauty of working with children. And I've worked with infants as well. I've worked with pregnant mothers very successfully. And yeah, we have several babies that my clients attribute to working with me. So, yeah. Well, yeah, kids are great when it comes to herbal medicine. You just have to make it a little bit more palatable sometimes.
Okay. What do you think it would take for us to get insurance companies to set up what would be considered a conversion of benefits? Because it seems to me that this can be not only valuable, but it can be cost effective. Is there anybody that's doing it? If not, what are some suggestions you have on how we can go in that direction?
Well, that would be in herbal medicine, because we're talking about so many different kinds of herbal medicine. We have the Native American, we have the Ayurvedic, we have the shamanic, we have the Chinese, we have South American, different kinds of medicine. We have all these different kinds of herbal medicine, which is why, thankfully, it has not been regulated yet, because how do you regulate or license something that is so varied? But my suggestion would be for someone to really research the person that they're going to be working with as an herbalist. And that would And that's the other part, is how would an insurance company know that Ayurveda is better than Chinese medicine, is better than Native American medicine, is better than some other kind of herbal medicine? There's so many different kinds. My background is in the sciences, so mm-hmm. I have a very clear idea of what, or perhaps even a more clear idea of what these herbs do. And Chinese medicine specifically, and somewhat in Ayurveda, has very carefully documented what exactly the herbs do based on their five elements or five phases and based on their tastes. And so it's very precise, more precise, I would say, than the pharmaceuticals, which, as you know, people will go in and, oh, try this. And if this doesn't work, oh, try that. And so, and they can go through 10 medications before they find something that suppresses what they're trying to so-called cure. But in Eastern medicine, first of all, we don't suppress, we mm-hmm. clear. And then we do what's necessary to bolster the system to stay healthy. And of course, counsel on lifestyle and food guidelines. So I don't know how an insurance company, I don't think at this point, because there is no regulation of herbal medicine in this country, which I, like I said, I'm very grateful for. But that would be, they would have to do it practitioner by practitioner, not simply based on their education, because an herbalist can be someone of my education, which is not only the sciences, but Ayurveda, Chinese medicine, and Western herbal medicine, plus all that goes into understanding what makes certain herbs do what they do. But other herbalists have 6-week education and then are deemed herbalists after that. So that would be a really difficult thing to do.
But to maybe look at it through a different lens, that might be exactly why at some point in time it should become something that's regulated, so that there's a bar that needs to be reached in education before you can truly call yourself that. And so that's the one thought that comes to mind. But go ahead. I think you have a comment on that.
Well, yeah, one bar would be education. I would say mm-hmm. that would be the case. But the quality of a practitioner is not based just only on education.
I couldn't agree more.
So any more than a medical doctor is qualified based on just their education. There are some wonderful medical doctors. By the way, I'm so glad we have them, because trauma mm-hmm. medicine is the best in the world. And we do need to continue having Western medicine because of that. But medicine is an art. It'll never be a science. I know it's touted as a science. They use science, but their science is so outdated compared to quantum physics, which was discovered in the early part of the last century and is still not enveloped into the medical profession. They actually ignore it. So if they did use science, then they would be aware of the awareness of the cells in the body and the awareness of a human's intellect and spirit. So, but they aren't. They completely ignore it because it doesn't suit their bottom line.
Well, and the reason that I'm sort of heading towards or going after insurance companies in this situation is, it's become something that, you know, if you can't afford this, you can't get it in many situations.
Right.
And that's the part that's so sad, to where, you know, it's, you know, they now are pushed into a system that may not be really helping. You know, it's not really doing it. But insurance says this is the only thing we're going to pay for, so it's your only choice.
We get that.
But it's why I use the term conversion of funds. And many years ago, I did this with dealing with children or teens that were dealing with mental health issues or drug and alcohol issues, to where, you know, I would call the insurance company myself, because the parents at that point are usually exhausted from everything that they're going through. But I would call them and say, I want to help the parents work out a conversion of funds. I said, right now they're being told that their child will be covered to go into an acute hospital to deal with their issues, that will be charging you, the insurance company, you know, about $15,000, you know, a week or something like that. I mean, it's going to be very, very expensive to be able to do this. But, you know, their psychologist, their educational consultant, other professionals that are working with them say that what would really work best for them is maybe after they go through a detox to go out to a specialized wilderness program that's going to focus on them becoming a healthier human being mentally and physically. And this costs whatever, $6,000 a month. So, so instead of them racking up $15,000 a week, and your policy says that they can be in there 60 days, you're going to generate a huge amount of money or bills for you to pay. Can we work out something that it says for the next year, you will pay for them to go to this specialized program? It will cost you less, you know, Mr. Insurance Company or Ms. Insurance Company, it'll cost you less. And the problem with that is that, you know, it would take weeks for them to run that up the ladder and to have meetings and to discuss it. And I'm like, you have a child that's, you know, in a psychiatric facility going through withdrawals. I mean, so it's like, you can't take weeks to figure this out. Sometimes they would actually agree. Other times they would just go no, and I felt like I had failed because the child wasn't getting what they really needed. And that's what I see with what you're doing, is that if we could have a situation to where we can call the insurance company and have every insurance company set up a conversion of funds department, so that they can, as you're saying, take each practitioner one by one and have them explain, here's what I believe we can do, but it would really be nice if you would pay for this rather than the only other option that's going to be given to them. So there's what I would like to do for the area of your expertise, and for those like you, is to be able to set up something like that so that we can all help more people.
That would be wonderful. How would you measure something like that? And of course, insurance companies, even the GNP is all based on numbers, and the world is based on numbers, which is why we're in the problem. But how do we qualify if that child is benefiting? And see, that's what they would want to know. And that's the problem. That's where the analytics come in. That's where the linear thinking comes in. And I, having been a scientist, I totally understand that. And there's no way to qualify the end result of, except in the sense that this child will grow up to be a productive, balanced human being, but that's not what they care about. That's the part of the problem.
Well, I think that, and because you mentioned numbers, and I agree with you, but I think that you have to play their game, and their game is numbers.
Right.
You know, but it's also numbers that relate to dollars. And so for them, if they're signing off on something that says, Johnny's either going to go into this hospital and in the next 60 days, which because we're coming up to a year end, they're going to burn through, $120,000. And then we're going to start a new year. So if that hospital thinks that Johnny needs to stay longer, they're going to burn through another 120,000, before, the next 60 day thing is up. Mm-hmm. So it's okay. So you're either going to burn through, $250,000 with this treatment without any real confidence that it's going to work. But, it can be, look, sign off here that, for the next year from today for the next year, we'll keep the bill under 100,000 to
easily in herbal medicine.
Yes. But that's what I'm saying is that we'll keep the bill under 100,000 and you will not, for the next year, you will not get any more bills other than this, I think if you just, if you speak their language is what I'm thinking.
So you're talking about just the figures, the money figures,
right?
Would be the what you would go to them with.
Well, what I would say is not because I believe that that's the most important thing, but it's because I have worked for insurance companies, and the insurance companies.
Yes.
Part of running it up the ladder is they send it to their actuary.
Yes.
And their actuary calculates everything out and then comes back and gives them a complete dollar and cents answer, mm-hmm. Without taking into consideration all the other factors. But mm-hmm. if that's the game they're going to play, let's use it to help more people.
That would be fabulous. And it would also help the alternative medicine practitioners to
absolutely
help more people. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And make it affordable. So, because herbal medicine, while it's very much less expensive than Western medicine by far, it sometimes mm-hmm. is not inexpensive, depending on what needs to be done. Yeah.
Oh, definitely. So. And I think also because there is not as many practitioners available, it also means that oftentimes people have to travel just to go to find the person that can help them, which mm-hmm. adds even more expense.
Yes. Yes. People ask me all the time, where can I find somebody like you on the East Coast? I have no idea. I don't know people. I haven't heard of it. I mean, I know there must be somebody, but who practices both Ayurveda and Chinese medicine along with the Western? I mean, mm-hmm. I know there are a few, but not that many. Herbal medicine is a field that unfortunately is not sought after because it's not regulated, not licensed. You get a certificate, but you don't get a license afterwards. And so, mm-hmm. but it is a very lucrative field if you know what you're doing. And that's the key. Well, and if you care.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So I'm looking up. We've only got about 5 minutes, and there was a couple other things I wanted to get sure. through. And one of the things that you mentioned, and I think it was in your book, might have been in one of your speeches that I also viewed, but where people losing their sense of taste and that being used in the healing process. Well, during the COVID crisis, I spoke to people who, while getting COVID, had lost their sense of taste. Mm-hmm. And most of us, I don't think that, the sense of taste is being used in the healing process. Can you explain a little bit about that?
Well, if you think about taste as something that your body craves, certain tastes, although craving is not always the right indication for what you should be eating, but, mm-hmm. The tastes have an ability because of their chemical reaction in the body that it will stimulate a certain response in the body, which will then steer the body in a particular direction. Mm-hmm. So there are six tastes in Ayurveda, five in Chinese medicine, but and one must eat proper amounts of those throughout the day to keep the body balanced. And so taste, again, is the way that we, again, it transfers a particular chemical reaction, which mm-hmm. stimulates the nervous system, which then tells the nervous system to respond in a certain way. And that is how ancient Eastern herbal medicine is actually used, by the taste. So when we say, when we were talking about a particular herb, we might say it has a sweet and bitter taste. So that means that it has those particular actions in the body, which then direct the body to do a certain or have a certain response, and also in a certain organ system or a certain place in the body. So we know precisely what flavors, if you want to think of it, or tastes to use based on that to accomplish a certain response. And that's how we do the healing that we do in Eastern medicine. It's very specific and it's very accurate. It's amazing.
I love it. I'm just looking up and we're almost out of time. So if anybody's out there and they're listening to this, and as we said, you know, geography is an issue, how can listeners or viewers go about finding a systems practitioner?
That's a really, well, the Eastern medicine practitioners generally are trained in systems thinking. Some are better than others. And it's difficult to find an herbalist that has that kind of training. But generally, Ayurvedic or Chinese medicine will give you the better practitioners, and you just have to qualify people from there, because not every practitioner is equal. I have seen some good ones, and I've seen not good ones. Same with medical doctors.
Yeah. Are there associations? Is there an association of Ayurvedic? Is there an association of Chinese?
I believe there is the NAMA, National Ayurvedic, N-A-M-A. I can't even remember what the stands for, but you can find practitioners through there. Okay. And then the NCCAOM, which is the Acupuncture Association. However, acupuncturists are not necessarily herbalists. And mm-hmm. so there would be that differentiation. Generally, the older acupuncturists, the ones that have been around for 40 years, have also been trained in herbal medicine and generally know what they're doing in that department. But more modern trained acupuncturists are not generally trained in herbal medicine, unfortunately.
Well, what is the best way that people can get a hold of you to get more information from you and or to get the book?
Well, you can go to my website, Judith, JudythShamosh.com. My email is info@judithshamosh.com. So you can contact me through that. You can also order the book on my website if that's what you wish. And
I would assume it's on Amazon and you can order it through your.
Oh yes, it's on other platforms as well.
That's
Barnes
great.
And Noble, Amazon.
Mm-hmm. Right. And one of the things that I want to remind everybody is that if you have your own favorite little local bookstore that you use, if you just give them a call and tell them, they can almost always just order it and have it to
Absolutely.
You within a couple of days or have it into their store within a couple of days. So, you know, remember that although we do have these huge corporations that are out there, the local bookstores can get just about anything that you need in their area.
And it wouldn't cost you shipping either.
Exactly. Yes.
Which
I like
is helpful.
That.
Yeah.
So. Yes. Well, Judith, thank you so much for everything that you're doing, but and for coming on the show.
My pleasure.
And I look forward to talking to you even a little bit afterwards.
Sure.
But you mentioned something when you said, you know, maybe that has to come up in the next book. Do you have another one that's in the works? Because we'd love to have you back.
I do. It's kind of slowly coming together. I also have a novel I'm writing. So, I have all kinds of stuff I'm writing. I'm always writing. That's what I do anymore.
Okay. Well, please just stay in touch. I want to stay in touch with as many people as possible that are making a positive difference in the world. And you are definitely one of them.
Thank you, Alan. And so are you.
Thank you. I appreciate
Absolutely.
That.
Yeah.
All right. Now, for everybody out there, please. Okay. So on the heels of this week's show, be with us next week, because we're going to be joined by another great guest, which is Michael Shea. And he's going to discuss his new book, The Biodynamics of the Immune System. And I am a firm believer that rather than having us constantly doing things that are trying to replace the immune system, that I would rather see us do things that keep our immune system healthy so that it does its job. And that's a lot about what Michael's going to be talking about. So make sure that you check this one out. And visit our archives of past interviews. Just go to answers.network. We have hundreds of shows that you can check out. Or you can just subscribe through Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, SoundCloud, YouTube, Rumble, Spreaker, and so many more. And if you like what you hear, please leave a review. It helps us reach more people, and I want you to know we greatly appreciate it. Also, the next time you're on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, please remember, stop by our page, check out some of our latest posts, and if you like them, please like us and spread the word. So for everybody out there, be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers Network.
You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Cardoza, only on LA Talk Radio.